Oh, it's Mr. Mexico.
Yeah.
Mr. Mexico, that's me. I go to Mexico like once.
All the time?
Mr. Mexico?
No, you go all the time, dude. You're always doing vacations. Your family.
I like to do, you know, once a year, recharge. And truth be told, I feel recharged.
Do you really?
Honestly, I was surprised at how recharged.
What recharges you,
Bananas? Just seeing the sun, like the big glowing orb, you know?
Why are you so pale, though?
Okay, I actually talked about this yesterday.
Yeah, because it's kind of startling. Like, we're a, like, big-time pale show right now. Like, Simon, Joe, myself, we all have, like, Eastern European blood. It's not a, like, it's a shiny show in here, you know? Like, you shine a bright light, and it's just a lot of shine, you know, a lot of gleam.
Yeah.
And you could fit right in right now.
Yeah, and that's not normally my deal. Like, I'm a guy that tans
real
well.
Dude, it pisses me off. You go golfing for, like, 2 days, and you show up, and you have one of the most aggressive farmers tan. You become a farmer.
You know the difference between the golf times and the Mexico times? Is
Mexico
that
time,
golf...
you just stayed under an umbrella and drank...
No, well...
Margaritas?
No. I did have a big hat, but no, I wore sunscreen.
Well, yeah, you always
honestly
have a big hat. You have a huge head.
Yeah, but I got one of those big Quicksilver, like, straw hats, you know, the ridiculous-looking hats.
Yeah.
With a drawstring.
Oh, God.
So
dude.
That it doesn't blow off my head.
No one has worse fashion than you, and every time I think you've hit a new low in terms of your fashion, you find another way. You just show up and go, hey, look at this. I think, I mentioned to you that you're older than Homer Simpson now. Congratulations. That's
you're right there. Like, you talk as if we're in total different
stratospheres. I'm a few years younger than you, so that's fine. I'm not, like, it is what it is. Am I a few years younger than you, yes or no? Thank you. So there is the thing with Homer where he just, you know, wears horrific things. Like, you remind me of him wearing the Rastafarian hat. that's you.
With the narc?
Narc. Yeah, you're wearing
your Lollapalooza?
Hat. You probably had the, like, white sunscreen on your nose and your big straw hat.
Well, this is it. So, so when I golf, I don't wear sunscreen because I like to get me a tan. And I don't think about the future so much, and I probably should. But then I'm with my kids, right? I got to practice what I preach, and they just get covered head to toe with SPF 50.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're wearing, like, swim shirts. They're not, like, even allowed to go in the water without a shirt on. So, it would be a tough look if I didn't also just cover myself in SPF 50. And plus my big hat, I will say, I liked it, but it inhibited the tan a little bit. So
not a little bit, a lot of it. But I will say that I am actually, I'd rather be you than... basically the rest of us that do this vacation, where we all think, like, okay, I'll put sunscreen on once or twice, kind of like I'm here in Ontario for the summer, in the middle of summer, right? Oh, I can be a little neglectful of the sunscreen as you drink all day and you're in a pool and you're exposed. And then night one, you're violently ill and completely red. And then the rest of the trip, you're just battling through a horrific sunburn.
I didn't want that.
No, that's a bad place. You know who lives there.
That's you?
Oh, yeah.
That's your move, man.
Oh, that is my move. That has always been my move. You got to give me credit, though. I do battle through. I do battle through, and then when I get back, though, I need to spend 2 days in
Burn
a dark
and rally.
Room. I need to spend 2 days in a dark room alone, where the only even close to human contact I have is the Uber Eats driver who drops the deliveries off my door before I reach inside or outside and grab it like Gollum.
See, if I do what you do and it like, totally knocks you out and you literally, like, vomit, like, if I do that, like, I'm in a bad way, like, showering the next day is tough. But I'm okay because my skin absorbs the sun a lot differently than you, and then it turns me into an even more, if you can imagine it, beautiful man.
Nah,
but,
I can't.
I know. It's but yeah,
big bulbous head and pale skin. Who could ever imagine that that gets more handsome? Man, I've cried in the shower on vacations before, where I've been so drunk and so sunburned that I'm like Tobias Funke, just weeping in the shower, like, just begging for somebody, like, maybe I'll get a private jet. Take me home. I need to get out of here. I did too much.
Your skin is bubbling off your back.
Oh, God, dude. Yes. Oh, God. I don't even want to know. I can't even go down some of these memories because they're just so bad.
So, being a little bit more pale is probably worth not going through the experience that you just described. So I erred on the side of looking pale And now I have to bear the consequences.
Yeah, you have to bear the consequence, which is this exact conversation with every person that knows you went to Mexico for the next two weeks.
It's embarrassing for me too, because like I wanted people to be like, "Hey, nice tan," like now I'm fishing for the I went to go get a coffee yesterday at the, and I was asking the guy, I was like, "Hey, do I look tanned?" He's like,
"You asked just the guy who sells you coffee?"
Yeah, we have a nice conversation relationship where we talk for 30 seconds.
That's better to hear than you've never seen just his face before, guy. And you say, "Hey, do I look tanned?" And he went, I have nothing to compare this to. No.
Compared to the guy who comes in here at 8:30 in the morning, no.
Yeah, just looking at you beside the person who's standing next to you. That's all that they can end up actually doing. So I don't have a gripe with your tan. I actually appreciate you respecting the sun. I think that's nice. Good to respect the sun.
Canadians are
kind of, I would say that our legacy in Mexico is being sunburned people, you know?
That's our legacy. There's a little bit of that.
What else are we known for? You think Mexico thinks anything of us other than that? They're like, tomatoes, the tomato people.
Yeah, and people who get bilked out of money, yeah, shopping for stuff.
No, that's it.
Buying cigars. I love
cigar, it. Cigar, you're a sucker.
Yeah. The cigar guy, he kept eyeballing me.
Yeah. And you bought one, though.
No, I didn't. He was eyeballing me, and then he asked me if I wanted a cigar, and I said no, and I was with the kids. And then I put the kids down, and I walked by myself. He's like, "You want some marijuana?" And I was like, "Yeah, no, that's a great idea. Like, it's legal in the country I came from, illegal here. Yeah. I'm with my kids. I'm going to buy some illegal marijuana from the guy on the beach in Mexico. That's a great idea."
I like that I started this conversation by comparing you to Homer Simpson as a narc in a weird hat, and you literally became that. This is how the story wraps up. As you went, "This guy's trying to sell me illegal marijuana on the beach while I wear my Quicksilver straw hat, my pasty face trying to get a tan." Electric. Amazing. I have a couple of gripes for you today before we get into some of the serious stuff. Do you want to do them now or later? Because they involve Al Michaels and Joey Votto. Two of your favorites.
Listen, I'm not gonna program your show. I know you like to do that when you come on my show.
Yeah.
You're making me decide? That's not your show.
Well, I have some... Like, I have a bunch of stuff for you today. Let me start with... I need to do the Al Michaels thing because it's actually timely. And, the Joey Votto thing I'll do right after that. But, so, you return. You see the incredible comeback in the Jaguars-Chargers game and Al Michaels and Tony Dungy. And they just completely take it on the chin. Al Michaels actually responded to it. Did you see this?
No, I didn't see the response.
Yeah, someone, Andrew Marchand, put it in a tweet in a piece yesterday. He called it internet compost, which could not have made him sound older. Honestly, it was even worse than the call itself. He said it's internet compost, and I went, "All right, Al, you gotta throw the cleats over the power line. Like, there's no coming back from that one." But okay, I'm not going to defend Tony Dungy. He's just an incredible football coach. He obviously was lulling people to sleep in that game, but I was pretty surprised that a guy like Al Michaels, who has given us his entire life as an elite broadcaster in so many moments, has a bad game and a couple of bad calls and gets raked over the coals like that. So basically what I'm saying is, so no one is safe, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, but yeah, you know this, right? Like Joe Buck is amazing and has been his entire career, except for like those couple of months where his voice was messed up because he had all the hair plug surgery.
He almost died, and he was like, "Yeah, I don't care." Again, second Tobias Funke reference of the show today. He Funke, he and I both. Different
buddy, ways. I mean, there's probably some Tom Brady comparables as well, right? Like Tom Brady, greatest of all time, looks horrific yesterday. People are loving tearing him down today. This is how it happens at the end of notable careers. Al Michaels, the absolute GOAT, but obviously doesn't feel the need to raise his energy level if his partner's not raising his level, because he's like, "I'm Al Michaels. People know I'm good at this." And when he's saddled with the sad sack Tony Dungy's of the world, that's naturally going to impact his delivery. And
I think halftime did too. They thought the game was over and he kind of went to sleep. And for a lot of the Chargers comeback, he was basically out of it, going, he's thinking about his flight.
He's already checked out.
Exactly. He was done. Honestly, and then all of a sudden it was a game and he was supposed to be in this 10 out of 10 shape. Anyway, it's incredible to me that we just rip people to shreds this way. If Al Michaels sucked, right? If he was terrible for a very long time and then he ruined that game, I would kind of understand it. But the degree of... It was internet compost. It did get a little too hot. It did get a little too spicy. So this is what we do now. We're just all losers on the internet that are waiting for successful good people to grow old and then be like, aha, age.
Well, I think everybody just wants to agree on something, right? Like there's everybody watched the same thing. And I think can't smart people have the same, again, Brady conversation that Al Michaels is the greatest of all time?
I don't like comparing them, though, because athletes, it's just they can be polarizing. You can be rooting against them. Tom Brady, people have rooted against for 20-plus years now.
People root against broadcasters, though.
Why? Why would you root against Al Michaels?
I'm just saying that people do root against broadcasters. Like, there's some people...
You, not anybody else.
Although Al Michaels is just, like, he's universally beloved.
Yeah.
Like, who doesn't love Al Michaels? The thing is, he's also 79, right? Like, these things don't last forever. There is, like, an expiration date on broadcasters
we've
seen it. And maybe the Ross Stripling thing happened where, you know, remember that Ross Stripling no-hit bid that he had where he'd thrown 89 pitches? He came out after six innings and thought he was done and then was thrown back out there for the seventh inning and mentally had turned his brain off and then immediately gives up a hit. Yeah, maybe the halftime thing is real with Al Michaels, where he mentally turned his brain off. He's like, people aren't tuning in for the second half. I don't have to bring it. And I can think about my golf game tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, 27-point comeback. And the greatest charge ring of all time.
Here's the thing that I guess kind of bothered me about it is Tom Brady has Super Bowl wins that you'll always remember Tom Brady for, right? If we're going to compare the two, because I was kind of planning on doing this a little bit. With Al Michaels, because of our recency bias and because of how much traction that got, we're always going to remember him as an incredible broadcaster. But if
you believe in miracles, like his Super Bowl of all Super Bowls,
yes. Right? But I'm just saying that when you think about his most famous games, this will now go down as one of them. You don't think so?
No chance. Absolutely not.
I don't know, man.
No, it's a wild card round game between the Jaguars and Chargers, and the Jags are going to get stomped out by 30 against the Chiefs. Like, it feels big in the moment.
Comeback.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, it was the third biggest postseason comeback.
So tell me your three favorite games then, or your three most famous Al Michaels games.
Okay, well, there was, the catch.
I rest my case. I rest my case.
Antonio Freeman catch between his legs. Remember that catch? Yeah. That was amazing.
Yeah. You remember things as
Do you believe in miracles? That's the thing. It's individual calls. It's not game. Who remembers a game called by somebody?
That's what I'm saying. That's my point. Is this becomes kind of a real point of reference for his career because people were so mean. The internet was so mean to Al Michaels. Poor Al. Anyway, I was bothered by it. I just went, can a guy have a bad day? I guess not in a job like that. I guess not in a setting like that, but just the level of
that's what the money's for.
Yeah, I guess
that's what the money's
for. And
like if people shouldn't make fun of you because you don't make enough money.
Yeah, it's true.
Right? People should not
whenever
be mean to you.
I'm always like, people have no idea what I make, huh? People have no idea how many hours in a day it takes to do this.
Yeah,
and then the criticism levied that you should be fired. I'm like, fine. Can I come work with you?
You can make fun of Al Michaels. You can make fun of Brett Maher. Okay, they make too much money.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
That's what the money's for.
I'm going to save the Joey Votto gripe for later then. I don't want to do two gripes in a row of two of your heroes. All right. So there's this Scott Boras speaks. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get to this yesterday. I was saving it for you. He speaks, and I never know what to read into some of these agent things, especially with our boy Borcor, and how, he'll just kind of... you don't know exactly what the motivations are for stuff like this, but
yes,
he says, according to Boras, Minnesota, the Cubs, the Blue Jays were, quote, really after Bogaerts' services. I think a lot of people originally reacted to this the way that Blue Jays fans typically do. And even, hand up, I did a little bit, which is to instantaneously go, oh, he's the bridesmaid. You know, like that's just the instant trigger. But then I sat with it for 2 seconds and went, yeah, of course they checked in on him, but if this is true, right? Let's pretend this is actually true, that they were, as he said it, really after, right? Aggressively pursued, actually tried to make an offer, clearly could not pay the Padres price, which is insane, right? The Jays got boxed out of everybody.
Paying him $25 million until he's 40 years old.
Yeah, it's just that he wasn't going to play third.
No. Oh, yeah. No, 100%. You and I had the exact same thought. And I guess it's tied into a little bit with the arbitration stuff with Bo Bichette.
Yes, this is where I'm going.
Yeah, that Bo Bichette, there's just no denying is a great player. He's led the American League in hits 2 years in a row. And yes, the defense is subpar, no doubt. But it's a premium position, and at times he can look like an adequate average defender at that position. But that's besides the point. Like, Derek Jeter stunk at shortstop. But you know why he got to keep playing shortstop? Because the positives outweighed the negatives, because he was an amazing, amazing hitter. He's a Hall of Famer, first ballot guy. And the way Bo Bichette's career is panning out, same deal. Bo Bichette is going to maximize his dollars. And I'm not saying that there's like a soured relationship, particularly with the Blue Jays. I think if he had been drafted and developed by the Yankees, the same stuff would be happening. It's a guy that is the ultimate chip on his shoulder guy, believes that's his best route to success, and is going to try and maximize every penny that he can get throughout the course of his career, which is well within his right to do so. That being said, I think the Blue Jays very much understand this, and I think they'd be shocked if he's a Blue Jay, not just beyond the 3 years of team control that they still have left. Like, if he's going to free agency, they're not going to let an all-time shortstop player, like maybe somebody that breaks the shortstop market when he reaches free agency, they're not going to let him get there, and he will be dealt after 2 years. I think they all understand that. So would they like some security at that position? No doubt. Yeah, because there's no incumbent behind him, and if they were able to get something that fit the salary structure for Xander Bogaerts that wasn't the insane price that the Padres pays, of course. Like, we've heard this. They've had little rumblings about the Correa interest as well. There's just no question that they're thinking about life after Bo Bichette at shortstop. Not to say that that's like imminent, but no, that 100%.
Yeah, so this is exactly where I wanted to go with this. If you put all the pieces of this offseason together, it seems pretty clear that Bo Bichette is not going to be a Blue Jay for a very, very long time. And part of me,
more years.
Well, I don't think it's going to be that long. This is going to be my kind of half-hearted prediction, because this can change. I'm not saying this. I really don't mean to do this as like a hot ticky Blue Jays take. I think that there's if I had to bet on a balance of probabilities, just looking forward, if this is the last year of Bo Bichette, I would say yes. I think that this is Bichette's last year as a Blue Jay. Okay, look at it this way. We already entered this offseason with rumors that he could be dealt, right? I had Jeff Passan on, and he said it's not their number one choice, but it could be the C or B option. Okay, yeah. B is pretty, that's a pretty quick pivot. This is a Blue Jays team that entered free agency this year and clearly tried to be aggressive. They checked in on Verlander. They checked in on Nimmo. Now we know that they were serious on Bogaerts. Okay, that's three of the like top-tier premier free agents. Guess what? This sucks to hear, and I know they landed George Springer and Hyunjin Ryu. Those were incredible circumstances. Like, they were bidding against essentially one team. It was pandemic suppressed. Like, it's true, man. Come on, don't pretend like that. Okay. The norm for the Blue Jays.
The second half of this argument. So the argument is that they stink in free agency.
No, my argument is simply that I don't think that their path to improving this baseball team is going to necessarily be through free agency when it comes to big splashy moves. They are still going to be a team like the Toronto Raptors that has to improve, that like make their biggest moves through trades. Their splashiest moves are going to be through trades. Bo Bichette has 2 years left on his deal after this one, right? 2 years left on his deal.
Yeah, 3 years of team control. So, like, after this season, 2025 season, he's a free agent.
This season, he's got this season, next, and the one after. He's got 3 years left. This year, he plays for the Blue Jays. There's no question about it. There's no doubt about it. But they've checked in on Bogaerts. They entertain the idea of trading him. There was some rumblings that they even opened up the possibility of trading him during last year's trade deadline. His numbers as a defensive player have slipped. And now, I think the biggest one out of all of this is like, he is going to arbitration. And that's just business as usual. And you're like, who cares? And I don't even think about like the money being different. To me, it was something that I kind of mentioned yesterday. They're going to bring up all the defensive stats. They're going to bring up all of the metrics to try to get that number down. And it's probably going to piss Bo off. And do I think that he is the type of guy that's going to dedicate himself to the position? And balance of probabilities. Do I think he'll improve this year? Yeah, I think from where he was last year, he'd probably be a little bit better. Do I think, though, that's his long-term position? No. I don't think he's going to sign with the Blue Jays as a shortstop. I don't think the Blue Jays will pay him as a shortstop. I don't think that they view him as a long-term shortstop. And they've kind of given us a clear indicator of this. And I think that when you put that in concert with the free agency, the rumors, the free agent pursuit of Bogaerts, the rumors of potentially trading him, and now arbitration, where they're going to say a lot of bad things about his defense, I can see this, all of those things together becoming not an issue, like it's going to be on the field, but just a way of, hey, we all know what the writing is on the wall. So if it doesn't materialize into a World Series next year, then maybe this is best that everybody get ahead of it.
Yeah, I think the Blue Jays are open to shortstop ideas from now until the end of Bo Bichette's tenure as a member of the Toronto Blue Jays. Like, that's why they're getting ahead of the curve here. Like, if Xander Bogaerts had fallen into their lap, if they had found a way to make that work financially, Bo Bichette would have been out the door and they would have made that change now. But it didn't work, so they'll try again next offseason. Probably not during the course of this regular season, because again, Bo Bichette is a very, very good player. And that is a very difficult spot defensively to plug and play somebody with his offensive skill set. And you have him, and you have him for three more years. You're trying to win a World Series this year, so he's a great player to have at shortstop.
Well, he's still so
in the
cheap,
middle of your
right?
lineup.
He's still going to be cheap for the relatively speaking. He's going to be cheap for the rest of this deal for what he should be making.
Maybe $5 million, maybe $7.5 million. But I think this team totally gets where this is going. Mm-hmm. This shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. It shouldn't be a surprise to Bo either, right? Mm-hmm. Even going back to like the Francisco Lindor stuff, like this is always happening. The Blue Jays have always been circling around shortstops, but it's a very, very difficult position to find someone who can play adequately and then be an above average offensive player. And Bo Bichette is a below average defensive player at shortstop. Get it.
Yeah.
But Bo Bichette was this team's best hitter the second half of the season, right? Like, and again, led the American League in hits 2 years in a row, which isn't everything, but yeah, he's got 30 home run power. We've seen that. I don't know what happened to the stolen base stuff, but no, this guy is a extremely, extremely good player, but there's an expiration date on him. And I don't necessarily think the same is true of Vlad. Like, he's the only guy that's publicly come out and said, hey, I'd love to be a Blue Jay for the rest of my career. And I understand that nobody's going to hold him to that. And it costs you nothing to say that, but imagine Bo Bichette ever saying that. There's no chance.
No, but this is, again, this is just like two friends shooting it. But I think that what is going to happen here is Vladdy gets a contract extension after this season. One way or another, they end up taking care of that. And then once he has the money, it's going to put more pressure on the Jays with the Bo conversation. And they're going to go, okay, so wait, now you've chosen who you want to pay, and now you've set up a salary structure. So you're paying Bo, you're paying Vladdy. Are you paying Bo? And that's where I think it's going to become, well, what is the long-term future? And what you saw this offseason is the Jays trade Teoscar Hernandez. He's not Bo, and he's not, Bo is younger, more controllable. Teoscar Hernandez was at a point where he wanted $20 million, right? You see this with the Mariners. They were the biggest divide. I think it was $16 million and $20 million between the two sides. They can't afford to have own rentals like the Toronto Maple Leafs. This isn't a flat cap league where you can just decide, oh, okay, you let Zach Hyman go, you can try to find a different Michael Bunting. They're going to have to trade Bo Bichette if they're not going to re-sign Bo Bichette.
100%.
And I think that the only question left is, will Bo be here for one more year, as in this one, or two more years with the next two, and then they move him? Like, that to me is basically, like, I don't want to say sealed in stone. Anything can happen. I think that's pushing it a little too far. But yeah, I would say that I would be shocked if he's here for more than two seasons.
Yeah, there's no way you go into a season in 2025 in which you're trying to compete, because, I assume the Blue Jays window is still open in 3 years from now, that you go into a 2025 season with both guys, like, approaching free agency in Vlad and Bo, and you just stand pat at that position. It's not going to happen. And like, oh, okay, maybe we pivot if we really stink at the deadline and we trade. No, that's not happening. You're right. I think it's 2 years, because again, I don't know
how
what the replacement.
It? Yeah, it's that's. The
I like Zan. Even Xander Bogaerts, like we all know how good a hitter Xander Bogaerts is, having faced the Red Sox 19 times a year, right, for the entirety of Xander Bogaerts' career. Like, there's an argument to be made that Bo is better. Like, Bo has more power, certainly.
Yeah, this isn't
Xander's,
about
the defense is comparable.
How good he is.
No, he's really good.
Yeah.
Really, really good. And it's really hard to replace his production. But the Blue Jays are trying. Like, know that. Every offseason, they're trying. They're trying to figure it out. with free agents, and probably behind the scenes they're trying to figure it out with trade, and they're under no pressure, right? This is what's smart about it, is that you start now. You're under no pressure now, like limited pressure. Next offseason, the pressure ramps up a little bit, and then after the 2024 season, there was extreme pressure to do something at that spot. But it's smart team building to understand what's upcoming in 3 years and start trying to address it now.
Well, the thing is too, next offseason, there's really no shortstop market. This was the year.
Yeah. No, it's really hard to get shortstops, man. Yeah, it's a really difficult thing.
Well, you wouldn't think that though based on this past offseason, right? This past offseason, it was like, who wants a star shortstop? Because there's three teams that are going to be very, very pleased at the end of this. Yeah. And then, Bo seemingly a little bit available. When I'm adding that part of it too, which is the Jays might be able to get more during an off season where you get 2 years of Bo rather than just the one, and teams might be starved for that position. Maybe that is the time. The problem is exactly what you said. How do you replace them? You can't replace them. You are in a win now window.
You're replacing a third baseman next offseason as well, right? Yeah. Unless you extend Matt Chapman. Like there's huge decisions to be made next offseason.
I'm a little surprised by the amount of Blue Jays fans, and maybe this is just me in the echo chamber, who really want Matt Chapman re-signed today. And I never thought that was a contract that was getting re-upped with this team, unless it was a very short-term deal. But even then, it's kind of hard to envision it.
Yeah. Matt Chapman's a very good player, and the Blue Jays are getting exactly what they hoped to get out of him, and his offense rebounded slightly from the super down year he had in Oakland in 2021. But this isn't a guy that's getting MVP votes anymore. He's going to be 30 years old, right? And he's a tremendous defender at third base, but you can't pay him like an MVP candidate, and I don't know, it seems to be tons of teams that are ready to go over the top and pay. Well, I mean, the New York Mets just missed out on their third baseman this past offseason. You think they'll be interested in Matt Chapman if he puts up comparable or better numbers this year? I think it's a tough contract to lay out for a 30-year-old guy who already, you know, is a pretty swing and miss. Had 170 strikeouts this past season, 202 the year before.
Anyway, I think that one of the stories of this season is that Bo watch is going to be huge. If the Jays take a bit of a step back, if they struggle, if he struggles, to me, it's going to be a situation where every time, if he doesn't improve as a shortstop, the conversation is going to grow. Last season, you saw with the fan base, a lot of people turn on Bo for a long time.
We're all wrong, though.
Yes, he got extremely hot, and he was incredible, and he ended up being Bo. Bo was Bo at the end of the year, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think that sports fans will learn their lesson. I don't think I will even. If he's struggling at the plate for the first couple of months of the year, if he plays the way that he does like he did last season, we're always going to have the caveat of, okay, he could turn around and, hey, remember last year. But still, I think that he's the kind of guy that he is the kind of player that will get criticized by this market. There's always going to be, diehards, but people are going to turn on him if he doesn't perform well. And the other part of me is, I think he is I love to get motivated by doubters guy. There's no doubt about that. I said there's a little bit of Stroman to this with the arbitration stuff to me, that I'm not as confident that he is going to take all of this in stride and be totally cool with the things that the Blue Jays are going to say about him.
How would you ever know? He's ultimate Mr. Sulker anyways, right? Like, he always looks super sour. True. Oh, how would we ever know?
I did call him the Sulker for a lot of last season, so that is true.
Yeah, that's what he does. But again, I don't think this is a Blue Jays-specific problem. I don't think the Blue Jays have done him wrong or that, they've soured this relationship. I think what you said is correct, that this is a guy that likes to be motivated by negative outside forces, and he would have done this. He would have, him against the world, him against his own team.
Some responsibility for this. I know that baseball trade rumors are so different than basketball ones. It's just baseball trends and rumors so much more, right? Baseball trade rumors are seemingly now year round. There's websites dedicated to it. We have tons of insiders that all have. There just seems to be more agents that are willing to speak, right? In the NBA, there's not agents that are really out there publicly like a Boris. And so I know it's a different league, but I do think that they bear some responsibility for, hey, they were in on Bogarts, and hey, they may have shopped them, and hey, it might be plan B. There's a little. I think the team owns a little bit of it.
Yeah, but none of it matters if he performs on the field, right?
Sure,
like, who cares if the sulker sulks? If the sulker is sulking...
Well, then what's the point of talking about anything? Like, yeah, sure.
No, great, but I'm saying... So what is your point? That if the Blue Jays hadn't been out there shopping for Carlos Correa and Xander Bogaerts, then maybe they'd be able to sign Bo Bichette to an extension? Like, I just don't ever think it was ever happening.
Yeah.
And whatever team he started his career with, he was going to depart after 6 years and try and maximize his earning potential in free agency because he believes he can be the highest paid shortstop in Major League history. He believes he can be a Hall of Famer, which,
he's going to be.
It's hard to argue with the career trajectory right now.
No, my point is simply that if the relationship does sour, that the team definitely deserves some blame for it.
Okay, sure.
Is that because he is kind of a publicly facing, malcontent-looking-ish guy, and that he is a chip-on-his-shoulder player. Look at what happened with Stroman. This is why I bring up the comparison. When Stroman left, everybody blamed Stroman, universally, right? He came out, he had that...
Oh, not us.
Yeah.
We didn't blame Stroman.
But then, I don't know, we got a little bit more informed from some people, and then I think we blamed Stroman more. I think that's what happened.
In the moment,
We were very pro-Stroman. We were very pro-Stroman. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. You and I were very much on the keep Stroman train and blah, 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 and there's a whole bunch of different stuff. But the way that got spun out, right, was Stroman bad guy, Stroman bad clubhouse guy, Stroman can't have him around, you got to get rid of Stroman, you got to pivot off of Stroman. It was that for a long time. They want the younger guys to be able to have the clubhouse. They don't want his personality around. It got loud, right? I could see a little bit of that with Bo. I could see a little bit of that happening with Bo Bichette.
He's not as loud and not that Stroman, all of it came through direct sources, but Stroman was a very vocal player. Like Mark Stroman has a Twitter account. He's still very vocal, right? Like Bo is sulky.
He keeps himself in free agency. I'll close it on this. You remember when he went to arbitration, he tweeted after, or he quoted, I can't remember if it was a tweet or a quote, where he said, there's some things that you never forget.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And that was extremely unprofessional because this is the way Okay. So every point that you were making, I agreed with when you laid out the case of discord between the Blue Jays and Bo Bichette, except for the arbitration thing, because that happens all over the place. And everybody's so everybody knows the parameters of that, right? And he doesn't even have to be in attendance for it. And it's an antiquated system that uses RBIs, right? And batting average and hits, which should benefit Bo's case. But I just that part of it, I think, is stupid to care about. And I think it was stupid to care about it when Marcus Stroman cared about it. And I think it's not part of the case to make when you talk about discord between Bo Bichette and
Blue Jays. This is a baseball elitist take that baseball elitists have been telling us. No, I'm telling you. That's really how I feel about this. This is a baseball elitist take that they always
go,
hey, arbitration doesn't matter. Hey, that's business. That's just a business. And if you don't know about the business, then you're an idiot. Even though multiple players have said on record that it has changed the way that they felt about an organization and how devastating an experience it is for them. And if you're telling me that Bo Bichette is wondering about his future at this position and not feeling great about himself, that the organization doesn't view him, who is a superstar, as the future of that position, that hearing them make the case publicly to him that why they don't think he's good at that spot isn't going to potentially cause a bit more of a divide, no, that's asinine. Like, the idea that shouldn't even be brought up, that I lost you in that part of the argument, is nuts. That's nuts, especially for a prideful guy like Bo Bichette. No, truly. Like, that's truly insane for you to make that leap of, like, this is just business and everybody knows it's just business. It's not the same business. This is pro sports. This is a completely ego-driven business where there are guys that have gotten here by using these chips, and there are guys that get slighted, and the history of the league is guys telling stories of, and then a team said this and it was never the same. Like, I don't know why we feel the need, or you, the baseball elitists, feel the need to tell everybody else that arbitration doesn't matter. Am I saying that it's like, oh my God, terrifying, it's the biggest deal ever, the fact that they're doing this is a sign that the relationship is fractured? No, but do I think that it can? No, I'm saying to you that can it cause a greater divide? Should it be used as a bit of a warning sign? Yeah, I think that you can draw like those lines.
Yeah, it's a warning sign because Bo Bichette wants to make the most money. If the Blue Jays come out tomorrow, so they're a file and trial team, right? So they have to go to arbitration
now. It's not about the process. The process is obviously just business. I'm saying that what happens in the room and when they're delivered that message, that can make things worse.
No, it's about it's about Bo Bichette wanting the most money, and again, well within his rights to want it. And if the Blue Jays turn around and say, hey, man, you're right, like, listen, we're a file and trial team, but we can offer you a multi-year extension, that's what we're going to do. We're going to set the market with you at $400 million times 10 years, and you can sign on the dotted line and be the richest shortstop in Major League history. I think all is forgiven, right? It's just about dollars and cents for even Bo, I think. Like, even if, okay, it's like we could all be wrong. Like, the Blue Jays could have a $400 million payroll in 2026, and Bo and Vlad get max money and are both Blue Jays for forever and ever. In that case, like, everything's forgiven. Like, Bo doesn't remember that he was hitting seventh in the first half of the 2022 season.
See,
he's cold and calculating, and I think he's. I mean, he comes from a professional baseball background. Mm-hmm. He knows what this is about, and he knows what he has to do to get his. And he's. I mean, he's turning down $20,000 in pre-arb money or whatever it was a couple of seasons ago. He wants the most possible.
Yep. And I'm saying that these processes can still be damaging, and that putting all the pieces together, it can look pretty bad. Anyway, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and I want to get your thought on how the pieces fit together. And then, yeah, I'm going to say the cringiest athletes in pro sports right now. Quick break. Come back to the end of Good Hour.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right. Let's finish off Good Hour. So, try to rapid fire a couple things with you, even though we usually go a little long form. You've been bringing up this thing about outfield dimensions to me, and I don't understand it, because I just don't see how it could possibly be true because of the work, the value, but that goes into it. But make this case about why you think that we're not getting the outfield dimensions revealed.
Well, I don't necessarily think that. Okay. At this point, you could probably reveal the outfield dimensions, but I think it would be prudent for every team that's going through some remodeling of their outfield fence to build it that in a way that favors their offense and their makeup of their team. That's why, like, every team on a shoestring budget should have outfield walls that are like every shoestring team, like the Oakland A's do, and like the San Diego Padres used to, should have super pitcher-friendly ballparks,
yeah,
because home runs cost a lot of money,
yeah,
right? Like, and if you can just suppress home runs for everybody, it benefits your team. So the Blue Jays go into an offseason for the first time in their franchise history since moving to Rogers Center, where they can set the parameters. Like, nobody knows. Nobody's been told exactly. We've been told that there's going to be, like, it's not going to be symmetrical. We've told that, like, some of the walls are going to be higher, some of them are going to be lower. Well, they went out and really did emphasize left-handed hitting, and a couple of guys, like, Varsho is a big home run threat, Deadpool hitter, Brandon Belt. I mean, we've all seen the highlights of him hitting it into McCovey Cove. Like, it'll be really interesting to see what right field looks like. And why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't teams go out and do this, like, every offseason? Like, make, honestly, I'm sure there's a rule in the rule book that doesn't allow you to do it, like, in season, like, series to series.
Yeah.
But if there is, I would be checking in on that.
Yeah.
But, like, every offseason, you should wait until all your transactions are done and then build your fences to best benefit your baseball team. Why wouldn't teams do that? And the Blue Jays, if they're only going to do it this one time, well, maximize it for this one season in which you're trying to win a World Series.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a nothing. They clearly needed to get more left-handed, but the degree into which they leaned into that is fairly noteworthy, right? It could be a something. We've seen it where teams have moved them, like, move the fences 1 year and then move them the next, right? So it's clearly not illegal to do it any off season, right?
You can do whatever you want. Usually teams are listening to their players, right? Yeah. Like, that was the thing in Detroit. Miguel Cabrera was like, it's impossible to hit home runs at Comerica.
Yeah.
Can you please bring the fences in? And they did.
And they did. Same with the Mariners. They did the same thing.
Yeah. And Baltimore was the opposite, right? They're like, hey, nobody wants to pitch here. Like, okay, well, let's make it a little more difficult to hit home runs.
Yeah. Did you see the Orioles owner yesterday, by the way?
Oh yeah, it's
using
great.
MLK Day to duck yeah. questions. That was really. Honestly,
even though he took a question about the team right before that.
No, dude, honestly, it's one of the most shameful things I've like. We've had a baseball owners have had a tough couple of years through the pandemic. Whether it was. Was it the Cubs guy that was like, and I'm basically living paycheck to paycheck
yeah,
now?
And did you see, again, the Reds guy. Owner the day before yeah. also, like, this is, there's a reason why these billionaire pro sports team owners and billionaires in general seem to shed the limelight, because there's really not a ton of benefit and there's a huge yeah. downside. Plus, they're like, you know, they're not well-rounded individuals.
No, well,
when the Reds
so
guy.
Funny. What was so funny about Angelos was yeah. you could see yeah. it in his eyes. He thought yeah. like he was on fire. Like yeah. he thought like, oh my God, I'm going to be the most loved guy for this. Like, because you know he prepped for it. You know oh, yeah. that he thought of this answer. This was a canned response. He yeah. knew that baseball questions were coming, and the first one that he didn't like, he was going to pull that move. And then
it's
it
not
just,
like it was a devastating question, too. It was like, hey, what's the future of your family with
yeah,
the
yeah.
organization?
Anyway, a lot of people probably haven't seen it, so I'm not going to keep getting into it. But yeah, essentially the Orioles owner scheduled like one of his only appearances on MLK Day, and he had done like moves like this before, and then just yeah. Pasted a reporter for asking him a question that wasn't related to MLK or to Baltimore. After, again, he called the meeting on that day. I think there's like probably some validity to what you're saying. I think that it's probably a little overstated in terms of the degree of impact that it can have. And I don't know. Maybe if you're signing this incredible slugger that's going to take a million ABs, it just, to me, you could have an injury. So many things can change. There's so many movable
sure.
pieces
well,
with it that it doesn't seem like the risk is worth the reward.
Okay, so the Blue Jays were extremely right-handed heavy, right? Mm-hmm. Last couple of years, and this is part of the reason why they diversified the offense right-left. And
that's what I'm saying. It just feels like partially this is just they had to overcorrect because it was so drastic one way.
But imagine the Rogers Center had the right field that you have at mm-hmm. Yankee Stadium. Imagine that was left field at Rogers Center
yeah.
the last couple of years.
Yeah, they probably should have considered that.
And Vlad hit, you know, again, 45 home runs last year and didn't have the huge power dip that he did from 2021 to 2022. Like that's and not that other teams don't have good right-handed hitters, mm-hmm. but you have one aspect of your team that sticks out as an outlier compared to others. Yeah, it would behoove you to try and maximize yeah. that if you have the ability to change the dimensions, which I guess they didn't because they weren't doing these huge renovations. But I would say
no, they
would be
did,
smart.
But you're forgetting that, man. They want the revenues to be up. Like, that's the thing. So
yeah,
it's just
okay.
the idea that they're going to care about more, you know, two or three more home runs from a certain player over what is going to optimize, you know, the making money.
I'm not saying, like, rip out, like, luxury suites to move the...
What
makes the most money is a winning baseball team.
Sure, okay, yeah, but I'm saying that they would... I don't think that the correlation would be strong enough for them to justify it, is my point.
I disagree.
Yeah, that they're going to...
If you have nine right-handed hitters and...
Sure,
and,
then why didn't you do it?
Because, I don't know, because nobody's as smart as me.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
the whole Blue Jays front office is like, wait, we should have done the thing. Like, why didn't we do the best? Like, obviously, it's more complicated than that. Anyway, I'm going to move off of this because it's nonsense. So what is the grade that you would give the Blue Jays for this offseason? Because I think we can safely say that the heavy lifting, Brandon Belt is the last move of consequence. I saw Shy on your show, actually, Fan Drive, which you should subscribe and to review to as well. He had said that, I don't want to misquote him, but maybe they were going to add like a $2 to $3 million player somewhere, or maybe some flyers on a couple of guys. But ultimately, this is it. Like we know what the baseball team is now.
Yeah, I would say a B. It would have been an A if there was more swing and miss and high velocity out of the bullpen. And they took some flyers on guys, right, with high velocity and minor league deals and yada, yada, yada. But like Eric Swanson, maybe he repeats what he did in Seattle a year ago, but he throws low 90s and he's a mm-hmm. deception strikeout pitcher. So for that reason, it can only be a B. But there was as much as the Blue Jays did kind of get away with their outfield defense at times, it looked like last year because they were able to shift and do the four outfield alignment so often. They were 20th in baseball in defensive runs saved mm-hmm. in the outfield. So what did they do? They went out and got like well, he was already an elite center field defender in Dalton Varsho. Then they're going to throw him in left field. And then they got the best center field defender, mm-hmm. you know, before he tore up his hip, and Kevin Kiermaier. But yeah, they tried to address that. And they were, again, like 15th, I think, in walk percentage mm-hmm. last season. They went out and got a guy who's got a super high walk percentage in Brandon Belt, who's a luxury item, who's not even going to play every day and making almost $10 million. That's what good teams do, man.
Yeah,
they add on the margins. They add a luxury item, a guy that has no real position other than first base and DH, and they shored that up.
And it's a
guy that can pinch hit late and maybe impart some of that on base skill to the rest of the team, which I actually don't believe in. But yeah, he's a guy that does take walks and gets on base, so it'll be.
Yeah, it's
and Chris Bassett's real good.
Yeah, it's lower for me.
He replaces Ross Stripling.
It's a B minus for me because yeah, did they add those things for sure? But they also subtracted. Right, the offense was elite last year, and we've made point of reference to this all year last season. Even when the defense numbers were down, it was like, this is an elite offensive team. And to me, they don't look like they're going to be as good offensively. It's hard for me to see it. I also believe that they're just in a couple of spots now where they don't have a lot of depth for injury-prone players. Like, they've got Kevin Kiermaier, and they've got George Springer, and the things behind them are, you know, playing Kevin Biggio in the outfield and playing Whit Merrifield more in the outfield. And that scares me a little bit, considering my faith in those two guys staying healthy. So it's just there's a very quick path to looking very thin. And then even at the catcher position, right, they have less depth there, which is fine because they added Dalton Varsho and maybe he's a great player, whatever. But Danny Jansen has been historically pretty injury prone. I think that it's a pretty safe
where you get injured. Yeah,
yep, and I think it's a pretty safe bet that he'll have to miss some time this season. Now you don't have your number one prospect in the farm system, so you don't have the ability to be as flexible. You added Chris Bassett, but you lost a guy in Ross Stripling that you're basically hoping that like he replicates the numbers of. You didn't get swing and miss, which we all agreed was one of the main.
Well, Swanson is that. But yeah, okay.
Came at the cost of a star right fielder. And to me, it's just like, it's funny because I think that it would have gone from B minus to B plus, maybe even A, had they simply not made the Teoscar Hernandez trade, decided to pay him, and then go out in the reliever market and pay somebody that had some swing and miss instead. Like, I think that the timing of the Teoscar trade, the way that they did it, and then the way that the market moved surprised them a little bit. And it ended up costing them a bit. Had they been more patient with Teo, and had they considered paying him, because, yeah, okay, it's a lot of money, and people have brought up the point of, hey, Teoscar was so frustrating, and I was frustrated by Teoscar Hernandez. I understood the trade. I understand, again, like I mentioned, not letting guys walk in free agency for a lot of teams. But based on where the Blue Jays are, like in their, team trajectory, that they didn't make it out of the first round last season, I would have thought that this year would be a little bit more aggressive and that you would pay a guy like Teoscar Hernandez. And I can't help but think of the idea of an outfield that would have Dalton Varsho, Teoscar Hernandez, George Springer, and then Kiermaier as the fourth guy. And then flipping those two things, giving Teoscar Hernandez more DH days and having the better version of a defensive outfield, and then just adding a reliever for money, which was out there. Like, I don't think that getting an Eric Swanson was impossible for the Blue Jays. Like that was
a bad trade.
Yeah,
that was. I mean, it was a trade that we all viewed with like an understanding that there was more moves to come, and more moves did come. But yeah, no, you're right.
I just don't know how you can give a B when there's like a clear, you know, not good trade. Like that's I think at best a C minus trade.
Well, okay, so let's do the. So there's two players that were out and two players that were in. Like Lourdes Gurriel Jr. out.
Yeah.
Dalton Varsho, just like across the board, much better player than Lourdes Gurriel Jr. We can all agree, right? Like Lourdes,
I think he's a better player than Teoscar Hernandez. Even like if you're just going off of war and being on the balance of a player, that he's a better player. But he didn't cost you just money. He cost you your top prospect in the organization and Lourdes Gurriel Jr.
No, but I know we're judging against a 92 win team, right? Like we're just saying like additions, subtractions, and Gabriel Moreno played at a time in the middle of the season when you had some catcher injuries, but was not a factor for this team down the stretch.
I'm just saying trading your two corner outfielders, one of which has been an all-star and was your best player in the postseason last year, and a guy who is your top prospect in Gabriel Moreno, who might be special, and Lourdes Gurriel Jr., who I don't think has a ton of value, but definitely had a lot more of it earlier, right? If you were going to move Lourdes Gurriel Jr., it was probably smarter to do it the offseason before And yeah, there's a bunch of mitigating factors as to why you wouldn't do that. But if he didn't think he was a long-term PC organization, and by all accounts, they were kind of shopping him for quite some time. So I don't want to be overly critical of it, but it seems like they moved him at the worst possible time. And I think that's pretty clearly reflected in his value. I don't think that they won either trade. Like, I don't think that they just went out there and dominated either trade. I think they lost both of them. And I just from a value standpoint, could Varsho be way better than Moreno? Yeah, but every person I've talked to on this show and privately says that they thought that the Jays overpaid a little bit and that that was a little bit steep of a price for that player. I think it's a B-. They look like a really good baseball team, but they were working with a really good baseball team. And so
they were.
I don't think they did anything cataclysmic. I don't think they did anything disastrous, but I also didn't look at it and go, wow, this season, they just look so much better for next year. Like Kikuchi could still end up starting for this team. They didn't add swing and miss,
but they
lost
a
lot of offense and they don't have a lot of protection for outfield injuries, which could be very real for this baseball team.
Sure. I think Kevin Kiermaier is the move that I had the most questions about and the most head-scratching.
Outside of the Teo trade.
Well, yeah, but the Teo trade we viewed through the lens of they weren't going to pay it. And also there was this other aspect of this, which is like, it's hard for me to comment on because I'm not around the team all the time. But yeah, this apparently even went beyond money. That was just like
they wanted to change the complexion of the room and they wanted to make it
They weren't big fans.
Yeah, they wanted a team that was a little, obviously more defensive, more left-handed, but they also wanted to have like a team that was a little bit more focused, I think, at times. That was a criticism of them many, many 100%. Times that they were pretty undisciplined. And if you look at the players they brought in, all of them are like baseball gamer crazy types, like just live and breathe baseball. That's who they are.
It's not going to be as fun of a
clubhouse next year.
No, there's a black and white way to view it. It's like Lourdes Gurriel for Dalton Varsho. Like, Blue Jays did better off with Dalton Varsho in a corner outfield spot than Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Teoscar Hernandez, Kevin Kiermaier, that's a loss. That's a significant loss. Yes. Obviously, offensively, and you would expect it to be massive gains defensively. But again, there's massive question marks there with, one, the age of the player, and two, the health of the player coming off hip surgery. So, I mean, does the gain in left field mitigate the loss in, well, what was right field now turning into center field? We'll have to see. Like, that's, to me, the biggest question mark is what happens in center field. Like, and here's the thing. I mean, the case that you laid out with Springer and Teoscar in the corners and Varsho as the center field, Varsho might be the superior defender in center field at this point in their career to Kevin Kiermaier.
That's hard. Yeah, okay, you said might be. It is hard. I've seen all the Varsho stuff, and yeah, his WAR obviously was very.
He's very good in center field.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And so, yeah, maybe that is the case. I can't stop thinking about how beautiful that outfield would have been with those four guys rather than those three, and maybe it's Witt. There. That was the only thing with the Brandon Belt signing was I like Brandon Belt. Who doesn't, right? If he's healthy, he's a beast. Like, he is just an incredible luxury ad. Him pinch hitting versus who was pinch hitting for them last year? Like, Cavan at times?
Cavan Biggio was the left-handed option.
They tried San Diego Espinal doing everyone's, but he got hot.
Well, here's the thing. They have similar, like, Cavan Biggio and Brandon Belt have similar walk rates.
Yeah, but that's because
Hits... is capable of hitting, guy isn't.
No, that was what was so funny. I was talking about this with Jim Bowden the other day about how, Cavan is one of the most selective hitters in baseball. Like, he has one of the lowest chase rates, and you go, yeah, because he can't hit it. He takes.
That's smart.
The other guy actually can. Anyway, we got to run. We went up against it. But, yeah, do you want to stay with the B? Are you going to come with me to B-?
No, B-plus now.
Okay.
B-plus.
Wow, all right. Look, see, you hear that, audience? Like, he will betray. That's the true hot take artist, like you just heard. He's like a Skip Bayless type, where he'll do whatever he thinks is more argumentative.
I'm only more entrenched in my position.
All right. Benny, thanks for making time. Subscribe and review. Quick break. We'll come back, and I'm going to talk about Scotty Barnes. And does anybody even want Tom Brady? Honestly, I really recommend yelling at Ben to start your day. It really puts me in a right place. Like, I try to be cool and calm, and then he's pissed me off.
Now the energy's up.
The thing is, I love my boy. I love my boy, right? Mm-hmm. We're very good friends.
Yeah.
That's why it was always so funny. Sometimes when we did the show together, a lot of people would go, "You're very mean to Ben." I'd go, first of all, maybe.
You could be right.
But also, yeah, that is the measure of like a really close friendship. Like, you know, we talk a lot, and in fact, it's kind of hard because before we'll do that hit, I have to like really avoid topics. You guys know how it is with mm-hmm. like green room stuff. I'm like, no, save this. It's just, you want the organic reaction to certain things, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, it feels good to yell at him. He's trying to be a baseball elitist. And he's like, I hosted a show with Shai Davidi last week. And this is my thought on baseball defense. You know, like, or arbitration is just business. I was joking with you guys during the break. It's like, yeah, there's a reason why they say it's not personal, it's business. Because mm-hmm. it's like hurts feelings all the time in business. So, yeah, the guy who takes things personally all the time, maybe it's not going to be the best thing for him to hear a bunch of negativity levied his way, maybe for his game, but I have a hard time believing it's like a plus for the organization. Yeah, sure. Another guy, young athlete in the city that's had a lot of criticism, negativity levied his way has been Scotty Barnes. And he was the lead today. I don't care about, like, I'm trying not to do the whole Raptors conversation about tanking every day because I'm very clear in my position. There's truly nothing the Raptors could do between now and the trade deadline that is going to like significantly impact the way that I feel about this basketball team and the pieces that they should be trading. I'm on the fence about the OG trade. Like I mentioned on the show, like I've mentioned on basically every show I've talked about it.
Yeah.
I think that there is still a path for this team to pivot. It's never been a complete teardown for me, or it's gotta be a complete teardown for me. It's always been, hey, you want to make sure that you can recoup assets, especially when you are a market like Toronto. You can't treat yourself like the Heat. People go Heat culture, Raptors culture. Why does Heat culture get more respect? Well, like the Miami Heat are able to attract Jimmy Butler to their market, right?
Yeah.
They're able to say with, and I know the Raptors re-signed Kyle Lowry, but Kyle Lowry was willing to leave being the greatest Raptor of all time to wanting to go play down in Miami with his friend Jimmy. That it's a, yeah, they signed LeBron for God's sake.
Yeah.
I should have started with that, not Jimmy Butler. Should have signed
they
with
attracted
LeBron.
Jimmy Butler.
They got Jimmy Butler and also LeBron in his prime.
Some guy named LeBron. Yeah. I don't know if you guys also know.
Also, LeBron in his prime went there. So Toronto just has to be a little bit more careful in terms of the way they do business as the Raptors, because we went through their free agent history the other day. Like their best free agent in team history is Jose Calderon, who wasn't playing in the NBA. Their second best is Anthony Parker, who also was not playing
in the
NBA. Rafer Alston. Like you go down the list and it's a pretty horrific list.
Yeah.
The best NBA player they hit on was Bismack Biyombo, who had completely washed out in Charlotte and was a widely regarded draft bust.
You have no Hakeem respect for games he played?
That was horrific.
Yeah, that was just
really bad.
PR move.
Anyway, they've got to make sure that they get pieces back. And to me, it's way riskier letting the Gary Trent Jr. and the Fred VanVleet negotiations become ones that don't go well for you, and then losing even just one of those guys to free agency. I think it's risky to be re-signing Fred based on where the franchise is in terms of age and salaries. Like, you've seen it this year. He's had back issues again. They really ran him into the ground. Yep. He's a competitor. He's an awesome player. I think that he could really help a winning team. But based on where he is in his age, I still have a tough time thinking that the Toronto Raptors is a smart move to give him $114 million. So much of the conversation, though, has to center around Scotty Barnes. And a lot of this year, I would say, was kind of discouraging because he wasn't really looking great. Mm-hmm. But lately, in January, boy, oh boy, he has, completely turned it around. He's gone up to 18 points per game in January, which, actually, I think it's even higher than that.
It's 19.
I was going to say, I'm looking at Basketball Reference, and I think I should just refresh this because I think I have this from last night. Yeah, there's a good refresh. He's at 19 points per game. He's at 7 rebounds, which he did last month as well. He's playing the exact same amount of minutes that he did in December. But yeah, his defensive rating has improved over this month. And granted, that's team-specific. They played the Charlotte Hornets twice. Like, the schedule has been a little bit easier than it has in other spots. His offensive rating is 126. His usage has gone up. Like, the Raptors are using him more in January.
Mm-hmm.
And his three-point percentage has it's increased slightly. Field goal percentage is up, though. It's up to, he's making half of his shots in January.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting more blocks, like way more blocks per game. He's getting more steals. He's getting more assists. He just looks like a more confident player. Last night, he had a really or I shouldn't say last night, yesterday afternoon, he had this really awesome moment with Grimes, the guy that I would love for the Raptors to get.
Grimey.
Yeah, Grimey, where he tells him, like, you're not that guy. He had a lot of swagger last night. Like, he went, it was actually kind of almost embarrassing for him because he was doing a lot of gestures to the crowd and really feeling himself. And yeah. He went to the free throw line with a chance to put the game away. They missed it. And then it went the other way, and RJ crammed on him. And I went, ooh, you better win in overtime, Scott. No. But they did. They responded. They played well. He's diming it. People are talking about his vision, and it's true. Like, some of the passes that he made, one specifically, coming down the left side and then finding OG in the corner for a three.
That was beautiful.
It was gorgeous. And there are actually moments in the game right now. And I'm trying not to be, again, too much of a prisoner of the moment. I always recognize it's hard in this job. But there have been moments where he looks like he can get to his spots with, like, closer to the rim anyways than Siakam. He's just big and he's strong and he's physical and he's got that ball handling. And when he goes up to the rim and he does that little baby hook push shot, it reminds me of Kawhi.
Yeah.
And he grabbed an offensive rebound yesterday off of a Fred miss that, again, basically sealed the game for them. Mm-hmm. And what was it? It just kind of reminded me of Kawhi. Mm. He's got, like, that big, bulky body that just is a problem for a lot of different positions. You try to put a center on him, and it can be like what Brook Lopez experienced in the Bucks game.
Miles Turner as well.
Yeah, like he can get to his spots, and he can be a little bit too quick for you. You put a smaller guy on him, he's going to bully him into his spots. Anyways, Barnes looks terrific lately.
Yeah.
Like, he is really turning this season around, I think, for Raptors fans. For me, anyways, in terms of just, like, there's been a lot of talk about lost season. If he finishes the year like this, on this trajectory, then, yeah, I don't think that you can say it's a lost season, because the entire premise of the Raptors was, this guy's a movable piece. He's supposed to be one of the most valuable prospects in all of basketball. He was the, you know, reigning rookie of the year in a very strong class. Blah, 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 go on down the line. But I am shocked at how many times in a game lately I'm going, yeah, they should give the ball to Scotty over Siakam, who's an all-NBA, top 15, all-world talent. Mm-hmm. He's not better than Siakam. Siakam's jump shot is just, his ability off the dribble and in the mid-range is so much more refined and better than Scotty Barnes's that, like, there's just no question as to who is the better offensive player. But their ability to kind of get to that spot in that high percentage area when you need a basket is pretty, you know, encouraging. And so, The thing I've been thinking about off of this game and off of these last few Scotty starts, where he's just been, terrific in January, where they've been more aggressive and the team has started to clearly cater more towards him, is you clearly want to build around Scotty. That's just a no-brainer, right? He's on a rookie contract. He was rookie of the year, blah, 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 blah. You can see just, like, the caliber of player, how unique a talent he is. But I do still wonder how they view the team building around him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do they view this as even more encouraging that they can eventually merge the timelines between him and Siakam, between him and OG, or do they try to even get more aggressive in terms of trying to build young talent around him? Like, what is actually better? To me, like, at this point, what I would really like to see is him get the ball more and not have Fred VanVleet there worried about who's getting the ball handling duties. Do I think that there's probably a little bit of overreaction to the VanVleet talking about his role thing and the way that those guys feel in the room? Yeah, for sure. But we also had CJ McCollum the other day say that he's heard that there are rumblings and guys being unhappy in the room. I think it's pretty clear that Fred hasn't been happy at all times. And so, to me, it's like, you kind of have to have it where the hierarchy of the organization is, like, no longer mistaken. It's got to be Pascal and it's got to be Scotty. I don't know how the other guys feel about fitting into that. And I don't know how Pascal is going to feel about that moving forward. But Barnes, his development makes this better. Obviously, it's never a bad thing when you have a prospect playing this way, but it also does make it a little bit, I think, more complicated. I won't say harder, but more complicated for Bobby and Masai, knowing, like, damn, we might have to build a winning basketball around this guy.
Tool around this,
like,
guy.
Really quickly.
Yeah.
Like, him and Siakam, maybe we can rebuild around this. Maybe we can retweak around this. And that's, it's a gift and a curse, because maybe it does make you sign a bad contract. Maybe it does make you hold on to Fred VanVleet. I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting. And I think you nailed it in terms of, like, you know, at the beginning of the season, it was rough. It was rough for Scotty. Like, there's no denying that. I think the fact that we have now seen over the last little bit, the him playing like that rookie of the year and like that guy who everyone thought was potentially a special player, that just changes the calculus entirely, right? And, like, sure, it was probably an overreaction when people were kind of piling on Scotty. But
I don't
like,
think it was. His defense was horrific.
Oh, 100%. Like, it was just getting blown by. In terms of the big picture, yeah. Like, you know, I never thought that, oh, okay, well, maybe he's not going to be a really good player. Like, I always thought that was still the ceiling.
Oh, see, I thought really good player. But what he's shown so far in January is a reminder of, like, what we saw in the playoffs for me last year,
yeah,
where I went,
like,
oh, this guy could end up being an All-NBA type player.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think there's a lot of, like, they, you know, clearly his confidence was off. And when teams were sagging off him so much, like, he wasn't shooting. They did, I think Nick Nurse did a brilliant thing of, like, let's use him as a screener in a pick and roll. We'll get him the ball as the roller kind of going towards the rim. Because as you say all the time, he's the best when he's in the paint. That's when he's the best finisher, but that's also when he can kind of get some extra defenders and kick out. So I think they did an unbelievably smart thing getting him as the roller. All of a sudden now he's moving towards the basket, way easier looks. And you picked up on the whole, his passing into the post, like when he has a smaller guy on him,
yeah,
it's, he either, like, I think he shot so many free throws yesterday. He was aggressive. If he had a small guy on him, he's just back
him down.
It's
his most special attribute.
100%. And then he can see over the defense, right? Because there was that OG pass. He had another one where he kicked it to Gary Trent for an open look. Like, you're just seeing the things that make him a special prospect again. And it's just a reminder of, like, he does look like his ceiling is a real guy, you know, a big time player. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the calculus changes. Austin just tossed.
I don't think it should too much though. Like I think Grange wrote about this recently. Sorry. I want you to get the Austin Tossin stat, but I will just say that, like, especially we have a bit on the show called Austin Stats, Simon, which is like, they're not always accurate.
I don't condone this segment, Simon.
Yeah. I was like, it's just, so I'm not never going to rush to an Austin stat. It's more like, let's see what happens.
If we have time.
But no, it's pretty clear to me that the Raptors have figured that they don't want to be a cellar dweller. They always want to be good and competitive. And if you have a player like Scotty that is that good, you probably just can be more competitive more quickly. But which good players do you remove? I don't know if teardown was fully on the table, but if he continued to struggle the way that he was earlier on in the season, I think it was harder to sell it to Siakam if they were going to trade guys to stay here. But I also think it was harder to kind of figure out, okay, well, listen, then we're going to age out of all these guys. We've got to figure out more players to be on the same track as him. So what was the Austin stat?
Well, it's not even a stat. He just tossed in a Shams tweet from about a half hour ago. Suns and Magic have emerged as potential free agent suitors for Fred VanVleet.
Yeah.
So I'm intrigued by the free agent suitors thing.
Well,
It's implying that he's not going to reach that deal and then he's just going to walk.
This is it, is that they will pressure the Raptors to have to pay more, which makes them even a little bit more uncomfortable. The Magic have always made so much sense.
Yeah.
And this hasn't just been me. I've talked about this a lot, but this has been something that other, like a lot of NBA people have pointed out, that they're ready to take a step.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that. Yeah.
And one of the guys that really does make sense to them or for them is a steadying presence like Fred VanVleet, who brings a lot of maturity to the organization, a lot of competitiveness to the organization, professionalism. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of reasons why that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I could very much see where, well, I asked Blake the other day if he thinks that $114 million is still standing between Fred and the Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it should be. And I'm not saying for any team. I think that there are teams, like for the Orlando Magic, if you can sign Fred VanVleet for 114 or even more than that, that makes sense. I don't know if it does for the Raptors. I don't need to see this iteration of the group come back and think like this is going to work or that you're going to be able to improve it enough around the edges. Like, I don't think that you winning a bunch of games down the stretch and finishing with the 9th overall pick and then talking yourself into another mid-level exception is going to be enough. Maybe you turn Gary Trent Jr. into a little bit more depth, but look at what the Gary Trent Jr. trade originally was. It was trading Norm Powell for Gary Trent, and it was a kind of a lateral move, like punt down the, you got, I think it ended up being a little bit better shooting, but Norm was incredible at the time. He was better off the bounce. Like, he was just a younger player who ended up signing a shorter term deal for less money than Norm.
Yeah.
But it was kind of a lateral move. And I would imagine that if they're not going to go the draft pick route, like, what good organization is going to give them like a player that is a certainty to help them in the following season as much as Trent has this year? Like, it's a clear draft pick trade or prospect trade that you're hoping can develop over the next couple of seasons.
Yeah.
That's it for me anyways with Trent. I'm very unconvinced that this group can all of a sudden become studly contenders a year from now, even with Barnes' development, because of the lack of depth and because Fred, frankly, his injury history and the shooting numbers that have dropped off and some of the discontent that he has had with his role and the season, to me, it's just like it's become sort of a natural spot to part ways.
Yeah. So are you leaning more to the, considering how good Scotty's been playing lately, you're leaning more to the build around Scotty? Siakam is maybe not, like, do you want to give the ball more to Scotty and just have those two guys as just,
no,
like,
they're the two guys. Yeah.
And then everyone else is.
Fred should be, to me, I would like to keep OG Anunoby.
Okay. I was going to ask about
those three guys as your core and try to build around the three of them. And then hopefully you can extend Siakam. And I think that there is at least a potential reality that by the time Barnes has two more years in the league, that maybe he starts to really emerge and can start to have like his Tatum breakout.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened with Tatum.
And then you're hoping that Siakam, who I think is underrated in terms of like his athleticism and how he's going to age, like he is incredibly quick, but he's just lean. There's not too many guys that are Siakam's body type at his size. His jump shot only continues to improve. He's, you know, if you're letting him be the man on this franchise and he really wants to be the man, I'm not like overly worried that if they traded Fred VanVleet and they did a pivot, right, that he would somehow lose faith in this organization or lose faith in Masai or start to look for greener pastures and be wanting to team up with somebody.
Yeah.
Maybe, but doesn't strike me as that guy. Feels like a guy who really wants to have a bit of a runway as the focal point of an offense.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you have, to me, that's always been the premise of this team with Project 6'9". Was he didn't have to have all 6'9" guys, but having the 2 6'9" guys who can handle and get to the rim, both in different ways, who can both finish, is a cool, nice way of building a team.
Yeah.
And so now I think they've tried this out where they have gone, hey, what if we just don't have centers, and what if we don't have guard depth, and what if we don't have conventional shooting? And that hasn't really worked. Yeah. I would love to see those two guys surrounded by shooters. It's hard to get that, and it's weird because the two guys that I'm advocating for them to lose are the two shooters on the team.
That's always been the weirdest part about this.
But you just can't because it's the timelines.
100%, and I'm with you. But then it's just funny when you think about it in a vacuum of like the two guys that seemingly make the most sense are the only two guys. And I mean, Fred hasn't even really been a shooter this year, to be honest.
Yep.
He's like he's hypothetically a shooter. just hasn't really been this
an imaginary
season.
Shooter.
I do love this, though, that it's like, you know, Shams is saying that the Raptors are the most fascinating franchise to watch at the deadline. And this has basically been the party line from every insider.
Everybody's saying it. Yeah. Everybody.
Every insider has said now for, weeks?
Weeks.
A month? Keep an eye. The Raptors are the interesting team. Yeah. The Raptors. But what's fascinating about them is most teams in their situation, it would be very black and white what they're doing. Yeah. Fred would be gone.
Yeah, right.
Trent would be gone. And that they would maybe even be doing the OG trade if it was truly a Donovan Mitchell type package. And again, if it's a Donovan Mitchell package.
I don't know if you can turn that down.
I know. It's really hard to think about 3 first round picks and a first round pick.
Like, a prospect, a player, and a player turned out to be an all-star.
Yeah.
We didn't know it at the time.
Especially for a team that's lacking depth. Like there's a real strong case for it. I don't want to say. It's just hard for me because OG's so fun to watch and he sucked last night until the end where he turned it on right at the right time. We started knocking down threes, but just the defense and the shooting, the 3-and-D stuff. I don't know how you replace that. There's a reason why it's so valuable.
Anyway. Exactly. Mm-hmm. One last Scotty Barnes note here. I did see yesterday that he passed Tracy Murray for 28th on the Raptors all time list. So, you know, let's just remember some old
Tracy
guys.
Murray guy.
Yeah.
He was assistant with the Lakers for a long time. He used to do radio with me early on in my career. One of the first big gets I would get.
Yeah. Let's go.
Love Tracy Murray. big Tracy Murray guy. It's due time for action. We'll come back and I'll add the Brady thing to what we missed. All right, it's time for action brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in the action. Must be 19 plus, must be in Ontario. Please play responsibly. Okay, so it's Tuesday and we had a Monday nighter, so now we're back on schedule. Like, it feels good.
Yeah,
it feels right. Last week was tough. All of a sudden the schedule was completely thrown off and had to figure out one extra day of how to throw some bets in. So, Simon, what we do here is on Tuesdays, look for suspicious lines. That's the thing, is a line that feels off to you and examining whether or not you think you should be getting, like you are getting good value. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to pounce on that feeling. Or now you have a reservation like I should have with the Cowboys-Bucks game yesterday, where I said at the beginning of the week, this is a fishy line, but I'm going to bet on Tom Brady, the GOAT. I fell into all the trappings. The worst part about losing on Brady yesterday for me was that I genuinely all season long thought to myself, I can't wait to get to bet against the Bucks. And then the last few weeks of Dak and the Cowboys mojo really threw me off, and I went into oh, this is so Brady mode. And then I remember he's 45 and that team
that
sucked
team
all year.
Awful. Yeah. The team's just brutal.
I'm just so mad at myself. Like, it just, that was an inexcusable loss, like a truly, truly inexcusable loss. Anyways, we've got, it's divisional round. Got four games. Is there anything that sticks out to either of you guys? Go.
Instantly, the first one, the Bills being -5. I'm surprised it's more than a field goal, to be honest. After seeing what we saw this weekend, and the Bills' defense didn't look incredible. Now you got to go up against Joe Burrow, Joe Mixon, Ja'Marr Chase, and Micah Hyde is out for the Bills as well. So you're losing a safety right there. Like, after seeing what we saw, I don't know how this game's going to be separated by more than a field goal. So +5, minus, like, I don't know. I think Bengals +5 has a lot of value to it. Bills -5. It was weird. I saw that and I'm like, more than 2.5? Really? Questionable.
I think this is going to be a chalky weekend.
Chalky weekend?
Just based on the lines, based on... So I kind of like... This is just an initial gut feeling when I saw everything. Mm-hmm. Jags felt a little like they're getting a little bit too few... Like, respect. Too little respect for the Jags.
Too little respect?
Yeah, I just think like, it's still Andy Reid and it's the playoffs and...
Yeah.
Yeah, Kansas City's been good this year. Obviously, they're the one seed, and it's Patrick Mahomes. You could absolutely light up that Jags defense that has not been spectacular, but I thought that line would be a little bit closer. It's a playoff game. Giants-Eagles, to me, was the biggest fishy one, where I went 7.5, Like, we really just had this whole conversation about how Danny Dimes might be way better than we originally anticipated.
Yep.
And granted, the Eagles defense versus the Vikings defense could not be more night and day, right? Like, I do think Dimes is going to struggle and that this conversation is really going to come back down to earth. I think that the Eagles win that football game and I think that they win it going away, but I was just a little surprised narratively that this was the number. And my guess is there's going to be a lot of teasing the Giants up and thinking, hey, it's a divisional game. We've seen it too, right? In the playoffs. Like, look at how the Niners and Seahawks, it was close for a really long time.
Yep.
We saw how close that the Ravens-Bengals game was. Like,
Bills,
those third division games. Yes,
close.
Exactly. Those third division games are always trickier than we think. So I was a little surprised that it was 7.5. Mm-hmm. But I can get to those ones because they have the bye priced into it as well, right?
True.
Hey, the team's coming off the bye. Right. They've got the extra week to prepare, blah, 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 blah. You're right. The Bills-Bengals one stuck out to me a bit.
Yeah.
Well, and so an early line that I'm kind of tempted to jump on, because after watching the Bills, I'm not sure that defense can stop anybody. You know what I mean? And so I was looking at the Bengals team total is like 22.5. And I just feel like they're both going to put up points.
Hmm. So my only thing there...
The total just dropped.
It just
dropped to 49.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so here's my issue with this game and why... I don't think I'll have a confident play in this game other than maybe saying to people that if the Bengals continue to climb a little bit in value, like if they hit +200, might be hard to pass up on just that as a value play. Like -230 on the money line for the Bills seems strong, but Cincinnati being down 3 offensive linemen for this game.
Yeah.
Like,
that is true.
I mean, it was nuts to watch how much pressure Burrow was under in that Ravens game. And granted, the Ravens defense is awesome, but man, like the second half, he was just under fire the whole time.
He didn't turn it over though. And that's the thing. He doesn't turn it over and Allen does. And Allen also got pressured a ton. He had 3 fumbles in that game. He only lost the one, but he got hit a lot.
Yeah.
And Cincinnati's defensive line can get to the quarterback too. I think it's a little, you're right, suspicious line. Yeah. I would have guessed that this would be closer. And so my brain is now thinking that Vegas really does think that these offensive line issues are going to crop up and that the Bengals are in serious trouble here going to play Buffalo.
Yeah,
that their numbers are indicating that Buffalo is an even stronger favorite than we would have ever realized looking at this, because if they're 5-point favorites, that always makes me feel like how good the Bengals have been this season that, Buffalo is just... There are some models there that are indicating that they are like incredibly strong favorites and that we're kind of misjudging this game as the public and that the offensive line issues are bigger than we think.
I do think the big matchup here as well, on the flip side of that, you mentioned Josh Allen and you mentioned the fumbles.
Yeah.
Trey Hendrickson was in Tyler Huntley's face all game. He made the play at the very end of the game that forced Huntley to the back. Huntley threw it nowhere. Game over. Bengals win. Hendrickson, like, he was really good with the Saints too. Like, he's going to be in Allen's face, and we saw it against the Dolphins. He got pressured in the back, turned around, tried to make a hero play, ball out, touchdown. So that's going to be a really big matchup. And you're right, Allen with the fumble, especially in the red zone too. Like, this game just being 5-point favorites, it's just bizarre.
But this is my thing. I think that what we're looking at here is if the Bills don't turn it over the way that they did in the last game,
true,
they're going to win.
Mm-hmm.
like every that Vegas is looking at this and saying, we don't think that since he can win unless Josh Allen turns it over, and turnovers are not a thing that are very easy to predict. And so if you take that out of the calculation or you limit that in the calculation, this is what you get. A heavily favored Bills team. I will say, too, feels like a bit of an overreaction for the Cowboys that Dak Prescott plays one good game and that that defense played awesome against Tom Brady and an offensive line that has been sort of cobbled together, like a very immobile quarterback.
Yeah.
That and a team that sort of quit at halftime, I thought. Like, they didn't score on that first drive back, and then you just saw their defense go, we're not doing this. We're not tackling. We're not playing hard. That the Niners are only 3.5-point favorites.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm not really so shocked on the spread because we continue to have to doubt Brock Purdy a little bit. And this is the real, I know I keep saying this. This is becoming cliche for me where I go, this is the first real test. But this is. Like, the Cowboys defense can be very good. There's Micah Parsons on the other side. They can get stops. They can get to the passer. Seattle had zero pass rush. It just, that was an issue for them all season long. This is a team that can actually get in Brock Purdy's face, throw the timing off with some of the plays. This is going to be a lot tougher for him. Mm-hmm. This is the true Brock Purdy test. If he passes this with flying colors and they whoop ass and he just looks comfortable, I think the Niners are straight up winning the Super Bowl. Like, it's that's what's going to happen here. Because they've got the best team. They've got the best weapons. They've got the best defense. It all comes, they've got an incredibly intelligent coach.
Yeah.
If Purdy can pass this test, they're going to win the Super Bowl. I really like them as a -190 favorite. Based on the way that these two teams are playing. And if we're going to talk about how good Dak looked against that defense, like, let's see Dak also against some pressure. Okay. Yeah. Like, Dak's playoff resume isn't exactly sparkling. So the 3.5 just felt like, don't forget how many Cowboys fans there are. Okay.
Yeah. The 49ers are also, they have so many weapons that can kill you.
Yes, but
it's ridiculous.
The point of fishy lines, though, is just simply, why does this pop? And I think that Cowboys Nation is getting a little too high and Vegas is being like, sure, Cowboys fans, bet on your team. And that's already happening because the lines moved from 4 to 3.5.
The line just moved
again. So, anyway, I think that's fit. I think all the lines are a little fishy, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think they're all a little fishy. It's a weird one. I'm scared. Yeah. That's why it's like, kind of feel like I could be chalky, even though I really want to bet on
the first week in a long time that you can look at every line and be like, there's something there.
Anyways, that was Time for Action, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in the action. Must be 19 plus, must be in Ontario. Please play responsibly. Yeah, we'll look more into these lines throughout the week and try to suss out a little bit more data information so it doesn't just feel like all gut, which is what today is supposed to be. Take a quick break, hit what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So Tom Brady's done. It was weird watching him go out with just a complete whimper last night. Even the year before, it was at least a competitive game. They had the comeback. People went, Brady still got it.
Yeah. It reminded me of Drew Brees' last game, just a complete, like, end of career like that. No.
I don't think he's retired. We'll see, because he's turning 46 years old in August.
Yep.
It has to at least be a strong consideration that he will walk away. He did do his kisses daddy on the mouth thing that he loves to do when he walked off. And I went, oh, was that the long kiss goodnight? Mm-hmm. Was it the final daddy mouth kiss for Tommy?
Oh, God.
Was that it? Only private Tommy daddy mouth kisses now?
What's going on? Yeah.
Dude, he does. He kisses kids all. It's both sweet and gross.
Like, it's wholesome. It's
endearing that they're like, hey, this is our thing, but it is also a bit of a,
like,
it's a pretty uncomfortable thing, okay?
It is.
I know there's some, you know, son out there who kisses his daddy on the lips all the time. He's like, wait, it's weird? I hope so. I hope there's just one listener. It's like, Dad, do you know that people don't think it's normal that we do this?
Some kid listening to the podcast in math class.
I was thinking we stop doing that. Yeah. Either way, it doesn't. I guess it's just hard to always picture a guy like Brady going out like that. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's playing into this. But he also really did seemingly try to escape from Tampa Bay. Let's hear the audio, Austin, of what he said at the media conference yesterday when all things wrapped up.
We're very grateful for everyone's support, and hopefully. You know, I love this organization. It's a great place to be, and thank you, everybody, for welcoming me, all you regulars, and just very grateful for the respect, and I hope I gave the same thing back to you guys, so thank you very much.
So, first of all, as a media person, I can tell you that him saying to all you regulars, nothing made those media member, Buccaneer, gatekeeper media types hornier than him saying that.
Like, yes, Tom.
He knows we exist.
Thank you, Tom. Oh my God, we're the regulars. They walked around. They like, there's going to be one of them puts Tampa regular in the Twitter profile. Sounds like 100%. It's going to go down. But two is that's. I don't think that's a retirement. That's a goodbye Tampa. There's just no way he's coming back to Tampa Bay.
That was my read. Yeah.
But I said this a year ago that part of his retirement was he can't come back because Tampa is done. They had no path to winning. They had this special team that he went there, was loaded. It's not the same anymore. That division is a bunch of tough defenses that can get to the quarterback and hit him.
But defenses.
that's why they were able to even make the playoffs this year. Had there been one competent quarterback in the division, they probably get bounced.
The least bad offense.
He had to be better than Sam Darnold,
Andy Dalton,
and Marcus Mariota.
Marcus Mariota and Desmond Ridder.
And in a couple of games of P.J. Walker. So respect to Austin, to P.J. Walker, who he strongly believes in. Anyway.
2019 XFL.
Yeah, exactly. Show some respect.
Austin's time. It's real.
Except for it's real. Yeah. So I was thinking about this last night, though, when like I'm watching him. Would I be a fan? Because I was trying to think of the tweet for this, but it was too wordy and it was too mealy-mouthed, so I just decided to do it as a radio topic conversation. Clearly, there are teams that would want Tom Brady, right? Like, if you're a Jets fan, you would be thinking, I'd rather have Tom Brady this year than what we just had and we were trying to win, right? But if you're a Jets fan, would you, like, for sure rather have Tom Brady as your number one option? Like, how many teams would want Brady as the number one available option this year? So I wrote down, like, QB-hungry teams that we are going to know of, right? Saints, Dolphins, Jets, Raiders, Commanders, potentially Seahawks. Panthers, Falcons, possibly Vikings, possibly Ravens.
Okay.
That's the list. Did I miss any team?
Colts?
No, because Colts and Texans, right? Like
they need everything.
But here's the other thing too. Colts and Texans, very clearly, if they want a quarterback, they're going draft over Brady. Like zero of their fan bases is like, hey, would you rather pick in the top two for quarterbacks or, sorry, what are the Colts actually? The third overall pick?
The Colts are... Colts have four. Cardinals have three.
Yeah. So, like, all of those, like, Cardinals aren't doing anything, although maybe they would rather have Tom Brady than Kyler Murray because it's such a disaster. Maybe I should have actually included them on the list in terms of just a straight-up trade.
Toss the Cardinals on there.
Yeah, but those teams with those top picks, like, to me, it's not even worth bringing up. Like, that's why I'm even automatically going to remove the Falcons from this list.
Yeah, true.
Because if you're a Falcons fan, I just have a hard time believing that you wouldn't want to see younger development rather than try to bring in Brady. Mm-hmm. Also, your first choice is clearly a trade because you probably fancy yourself as an actual shot at Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson.
That's been in my head ever since Jason Lacanfora mentioned it of like him being the Michael Vick.
As soon as you said
successor.
Michael Vick, I was like, he's talking about Lamar Jackson.
I can tell you as a Seahawks fan, I don't want Tom Brady. I don't. Mm-hmm.
I can tell you as a Saints fan, I do not want Tom Brady.
See, that's an interesting one because like, I was going to ask you guys this. Like, that would be because your team is actually good. Like, the defense is good.
Yep.
And you have weapons. And, like, the coach is probably someone that you wish could get replaced. Like, I don't have any trust in Dennis Allen. I was actually pretty surprised that it just kind of went through the news cycles of, hey, he's here.
He's here. I know. I was furious.
Hey, there's no conversation about Dennis.
Furious.
There was like one little blip I saw from one of his media conferences where it was, hey, he was saying something like, I have the job as far as I'm told.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It wasn't a 100% sure thing. But then you look at the available options again, and it's just like, what would you really want? So you'd rather have the Saints use a draft pick on a quarterback than get Tom Brady. This is what I'm saying. Out of all the options, and I'm going to take Lamar sort of out of it just because that's such an extreme example of a guy that you would want. Like, everyone would clearly want Lamar Jackson. So if the premise is anybody can trade for Lamar, like, then yeah, clearly the Dolphins would rather have Lamar. The Falcons would rather have Lamar. The Jets would rather have Lamar, right? You go through these teams, they would all want Lamar Jackson. The question is, like, realistic landing spots for Brady. Those were as far as I could go. I would even take the Commanders out of it because I just think that they're so poorly run and that division's so tough. I just don't think Brady would go to the Commanders, even though he would go there with really good receivers, Dotson, Scary Terry.
Curtis Samuel.
Yeah, Curtis Samuel, a defense that would be much better next year when they actually have Chase fully healthy. I still think they're out.
The team that makes the most sense to me is the Raiders, I think, by far.
I don't think they do at all.
I think they do. They
They
have a top draft pick.
Yeah.
They have weapons.
Yeah.
Most of which are still under contract. Josh Jacobs, I expect, might resign. And Foster Moreau, who actually came out and was actually decent this year. Tom Brady loves the tight ends. And
first of
Devontae
all, Foster
Adams,
Moreau, you can't lead your conversation with, like, that's what's going to attract Tom Brady.
I know, but
no,
there's weapons
wait,
all
sir,
over
you
the
have
place.
Foster Moreau,
and the,
I'm coming.
Yeah.
The Josh McDaniels connection, too. Like, the Raiders make
every
the most sense.
Every team has a big white tight end, dude. It's just,
yeah,
like, not
Cameron
a unique
Bray
thing.
Was in Tampa.
Like, it's not a unique thing. I just don't think the Raiders thing is legit because the Raiders defense is horrific. There's no way of overhauling it in one offseason. Tom Brady has to go to a place where they could potentially win now. Like, that's it. And he's also, so he's going to move across the country, go to Vegas. Well, he would probably live in California. That's where he's
probably
from. I don't know. Or whatever. And he's buy a house there, go spend a year in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And he's with Devontae Adams. My contention is just like, I don't think that Tom Brady now is better than Derek Carr. Like, they're the same-ish guy. I just saw a season of the Raiders with Derek Carr. They missed the playoffs. Like, it's not as though the Raiders were just right there. They lost a bunch of tough games. Whatever. There is the Josh McDaniel thing. I think that's probably the most realistic. It's like, hey, he reunites with Josh, and he does have Adams, right? Those are the top two pieces of it.
Yeah.
They negotiated with the Raiders originally. It's a classic franchise, blah, blah, blah. Still don't see it.
I don't know.
I just don't know how they win. I don't know how they go. He goes to a division that has Patrick Mahomes in it, and
okay,
he plays him twice a year, that has Justin Herbert in it, plays him twice a year, and, like, this doesn't potentially end up in disaster where he looks back on this and goes, holy hell, like, I didn't make the playoffs. I didn't make the playoffs this year. The Raiders don't make sense. The team sucks. We just saw the Raiders season. They suck. They're picking what?
Seventh. I'm also, like, I'm fully out on Derek Carr. I don't think Derek Carr is better than Tom Brady right now. Fully not.
I think they're pretty similar.
I agree with that for sure.
I mean, they're similar, but I don't think Carr's
Tom
better.
Brady's better in the sense of, like, he's Tom Brady. But we watched that game last night. He had one series when the game was completely out of hand, when they were down four scores, where they moved the football and he made some completions and then he threw one beautiful pass. Yeah. Can Tom Brady still show a flash? Did Tom Brady put together some statistics when he threw the ball 1,000 times? But don't forget, it's like we're talking about this. This is sort of a, like, that reminds me of the Russell Wilson thing when he went to Denver and they said, oh, look at those receivers, like Jerry Jeudy they've got.
Cortland Sutton.
He just left DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett.
Yeah.
He's leaving Chris Godwin and Mike Evans.
Yeah.
These guys both could end up in the Hall of Fame. Mike Evans is 100% going into the Hall of Fame. 100%. No question about it.
Yeah.
And he's leaving those two guys.
Mm-hmm.
And an offense that he knew and that he got to design. He was fully in control of all of this. Like, are we positive? Devontae Adams is better than both those guys right now, but he's turning 32 next season. Are we positive that he and your boy Moreau and, and like Hunter Renfrew, who I'm pretty sure is a free agent? It's just the Raiders thing. There's so many things to figure out about it. It's so far away. For Tom Brady to be the piece that puts him over the top, I don't see it. That's the same thing with the rest of these teams. Like Seahawks, not good enough. You're off the list.
Yeah.
Vikings, defense, horrific, not good enough. Way too much overhauling to do. Plus, you got to move off Kirk Cousins. You got to convince him to come. He's going to play in Minnesota. Like, no way. That's off the list. Vikings gone. Panthers? He's going to go live in Carolina? He's going to go play with the Panthers? Would that be their first choice? I think the Panthers would draft. I think that they're done with the whole idea of we're trying to get a veteran QB in here. It's just not going to work. Are we sure, again, that Tom Brady, this sounds blasphemous, but I'm just telling you, like, are we sure that 46-year-old Tom Brady is going to be better than Sam Darnold was last year? Like, or Sam Darnold's going to be next year?
I might just be so used to the fact that Brady's better than most other quarterbacks that I'm
Brady
not.
Is good at throwing the ball. Look at
he
what
is.
Daniel Jones did this past weekend versus what Kirk Cousins was doing. When you don't have a quarterback who can move, it completely changes your playbook. That's what I'm saying. You got to look at this situationally. That's why even, so I'm surprised that you guys said Saints, because that is one of the spots that I'm going, you could, I don't know how Tom Brady would feel about being taken out in packages for.
True.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. I don't know about that piece. I don't know how I'd feel about going and working for Dennis Allen, but maybe they could bring in some kind of a coordinator. Still feels a little strange.
That we were immediately out on it?
No, to be, well, yeah, that for sure, because it's still Tom Brady and it's like your team, I thought the Saints were trying to win next year. Like my understanding was that they still have Alvin Kamara. They still have a defense that can ball out.
I mean, I think they are. I just, like, I as a fan wouldn't want to see it because I think that they are just not close to competing and should focus more on future assets. But I think the team, like, could be interested for sure. I mean, because they still have, Chris Olave. It's not like they have that many picks because they traded a million to get
They're not close to competing thing, though. Like, Tom Brady leaving Tampa Bay and them going into some restructure, rebuild stuff. And who knows? Like, again, Tampa Bay could be in on Lamar and they could turn this thing around immediately, right?
I'd rather the Saints be in on Lamar a lot more than Brady.
Well, yes, I already said that we can't use Lamar as the standard bearer because it's very clear that he would be that.
And that's my gut over Brady is I'm not fully interested in 46-year-old.
No, but if you want Lamar, you think you can compete. Like, that's my point, is you think you can compete with Lamar Jackson.
You also
but not,
have a future, though. Like, you'd have more years on
it. I don't get that. I don't get that. I don't get how you could have a team that has Alvin Kamara and Chris Olave right now and bring back Landry and, potentially have Michael Thomas return and not say that you'd want Tom Brady in a division where the Buccaneers just ended up going to the playoffs. Like, that one doesn't... That makes sense to me. It just doesn't make sense from a Brady standpoint to me. It feels weird to think about him going into Drew Brees' shoes, into his old organization, to go in with a coach that doesn't fit there, to stay immediately within that division. But it does. It's in the top three. To me, there are only three teams that make sense that could actually win. Saints, Dolphins, Jets.
Jets, yeah.
And the Dolphins are number one.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about Miami.
Well, here's the thing. Dolphins and Jets, all things being equal, I would think that the Dolphins are the number one landing spot. Tua doesn't have the health that you would say that you're not getting Tom Brady back. Again, if you can get Lamar Jackson, you want Lamar Jackson, right? That's off the table. But otherwise, the Dolphins fans wouldn't rather they sign Geno Smith. They wouldn't rather trade for Derek Carr. They'd rather have Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. They'd rather have Tom Brady in Mike McDaniel's offense with a bunch of running the football, a bunch of ways to protect him. And what was his offense this year, right? Get the ball out quick. Get the ball out accurately.
To two unreal receivers.
Yeah, to Waddle and
a potential MVP level receiver.
Like, that one makes sense to me. The Jets one doesn't really. It's just too far. They have one special young receiver. They've got some decent weapons. Maybe they end up getting Breece Hall back. But to me, if you're a Jets fan, one, you despise Tom Brady in a different way because there is more of a regional rivalry with the Jets. I don't think Tom goes there because of like the weather, it changes a lot of different stuff for him. Mm-hmm. Now he's playing New England. He's in a cold weather, outdoor climate. I don't see it. The Dolphins won. He gets to stay in Miami. He doesn't have to move.
They've had previous talks too.
The defense was solid. Yeah. Like their offense was just like, they were banged up. They were healthy. They've got an owner that will move heaven and earth for him. That will give him control. There was already the tampering stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it's Dolphins are done.
Dolphins are done.
Yeah, I think that he either figures out something in Miami or he's done. Because remember, it used to be the Niners, but this was the thing that nobody mentioned, is that the Niners were one of the landing spots that could make sense for Tom Brady, and now it's like, are you kidding? There's no chance.
No. I think they're definitely still in play, depending on what happens in the playoffs this year, to be honest
Brock?
With you. Yeah.
You think that Brock hasn't already shown you... Like, Brock Purdy, to me, is, like, no question about it, a better fit than Tom Brady is. He can
move.
Right
now, yeah.
Remember some of those plays that Brock Purdy made in that game, scrambling out of the pocket and making moves and diming it?
Well, he had one where he scrambled. Well, that threw a dot to Ayuk in the corner. Like it was...
I don't see that offense wanting a quarterback that can't move.
I agree. Like, it's not a slight at Brock. He's checked all the boxes so far, but I just think this is an easier scenario to move off of. You know, Trey Lance is still injured. You know, he's a rookie QB. I just think that the Niners have just been mentioned so many times previously.
I think that's dead now, Boff. I think that the Niners had that, everything that you mentioned, but the idea that they would go... We're moving off of Trey Lance and Brock Purdy to bring in Tom Brady. Because you have to move one of those guys.
Yeah.
I just, 46-year-old Tom Brady, maybe I'm discounting it, but it doesn't feel like that anymore. It feels like Dolphins are bust.
A lot of things have to happen for it to happen, but we'll see.
Anyway, we didn't get to any of what we missed, so we'll have to do some of those tomorrow. But as always, subscribe to this podcast, leave a 5-star review. I'm about to interview Timberwolves head coach Chris Finch. Talk to him a little bit about his... departure from the Raptors because it was a weird one. Mm-hmm. Excited to talk to him in a few minutes. We'll see you tomorrow. Talk to you then.